Welcome to an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma give their opinions on the latest happenings surrounding Yankees baseball, as well as dive into the hottest topics in the sports world. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Don't forget, head over to iTunes. You could download it every week. You could subscribe to the Off the Wall podcast over at iTunes. It's Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma from our office, and our special guest this week is Devin Karpardian, the managing editor of thebrooklyngame.com. Following the Brooklyn Nets, Devin, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Sure thing. It's good to be here. It's a wonderful Friday in Brooklyn.
It's a wonderful Friday up here in beautiful Connecticut as well. Devin, recently the Nets went on a 7-game tear to start off the month of January and the new year of 2013. They lost their first game recently to the Hawks. They'll get a little rematch against them Friday night as we tape this here. One of the problems that P.J. Carlissimo seems to have inherited from Avery Johnson, who was ousted as the head coach when the Nets dropped to 14-14 on the season, was too much depth in the front court. You know, you always hear in baseball, you can't have too much depth at starting pitching or in the bullpen as well. Is there a sense that maybe the Nets have to make a move here with all the front court help that they have on this team right now?
I mean, they've definitely considered it. They've definitely talked about it. Even when Avery Johnson was fired, he held a post-game or post-career press conference where he said, you know, I thought I was going to talk to Billy this morning about moves we can make January 15th, about guys who could potentially trade. And, I mean, at this point, the clearest situation, the clearest scenario for the Nets is that the best thing they can do is move Chris Humphries, who still has another year and $12 million on his contract. But the question is really, who's going to trade with them? Who's interested in that kind of contract? What can they offer? What sort of assets do they have outside of that front court depth that can really be enticing to a team enough that they will give up something that the Nets would like to take back? And I'm not really sure what's there. There are a couple of scenarios that you might be able to work out. Everyone, you know, at this point knows that the Grizzly forward Rudy Gay is on the block, and there's a couple other players they could definitely try to go after. But at the end of the day, it's hard to envision, you know, what kind of package the Nets can put together at this point that will get them something worth getting something back for. So, I agree with you in the sense that they do have a lot of front court depth and a couple of guys who are not getting enough minutes that they really should be getting at this point. But it's hard to kind of envision in the next month, you know, what sort of moves they can make. But again, that's why Billy King is the master of the multi-team trade.
Do you think, you know, players, you know, there's a lot of egos in the locker room, in any locker room, really. Do you think we're going to really see, with all these guys around before that trading deadline, do you think we're going to see what the Nets are really made of? Their mettle is going to be tested. You know, they're already 7-1 to start the new year. But, you know, when guys don't get the playing time that they think and feel they deserve, that could cause a little ruckus in the locker room. If they hold it together and get through this before the trade, is that going to show you what this team is truly made of?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think this, these next couple weeks, even without considering the trade deadline, these next couple weeks are kind of a test. They've got to play Memphis, they've got to play Minnesota, they've got to play Atlanta again, they've got to play Miami. You know, the P.J. Carlesimo had a bit of an easy stretch coming up to this point. They played a lot of teams under 500, and they've won, which is good, but they haven't really had a difficult schedule. The only real big wins they had were against Indiana and Oklahoma City. So to see how they can kind of respond to all the speculation that's sure to come up and see how, you know, players can respond and not maybe getting the playing time they think they deserve and seeing how they can play against some of the best teams in the NBA, we're really going to see, I think, a lot more by the All-Star break, how effective of a coach P.J. Carlesimo is, how talented this team is, and how confident you can be in a deep playoff run for it.
Well, let's talk about P.J. for a second. Dave D'Alessandro brought up a great point. He thinks that the interim tag should be removed from P.J. What are your thoughts on that, Devin?
I mean, I think he's coaching the rest of the year. I don't anticipate them making a change at this point. It doesn't make any sense. If they're really going after a big name's not going to want to take over in the middle of the season, and whether that's Jeff Van Gundy or Phil Jackson or anybody else. So I agree. I think the interim coach at least should be taken off. He's definitely going to get, I think, a chance to get to see how far he can take this team in the playoffs. And I think he's been very good so far. I think, you know, they've only made a couple of tweaks, but they've been really, really good ones. They put Brook Lopez in more pick and rolls. They're doing a little more stuff with Darren and Joe Johnson in specific situations. They're running a little more of that flex offense that Darren is more comfortable with. And the players really seem to respond to him. They seem to like him. They like his style. The way players react to him is very positive in ways that, you know, near the end of Avery Johnson's tenure, they weren't exactly, you know, it wasn't exactly that same story. So I agree. I think the interim coach label is definitely, I mean, even if it's not removed officially, I think he's getting the chance to coach the rest of the season. And then depending on how they do at the end of the year, they're going to reevaluate and, you know, kind of look at some of those bigger names again.
Devin, you followed this team for a long time and you have your finger on the pulse of the Brooklyn Nets. What do you think? You know, you hear all the time, well, we think that, you know, Avery Johnson just lost the player's ear. That had to be the case because the team, besides the San Antonio Spurs lopsided loss after PJ took over before the new year, they really look like the team that started the season 11-4 and got Avery the November Eastern Conference Coach of the Month. December, let's face it, they take a dirt nap and they get their head coach fired. You know, I covered the team since Avery came aboard as well, here and there filling in as the courtside reporter for Yes. In the dealings with Avery that I've had, now look, I'm not behind the scenes, but A, I thought he was a great coach, and B, I thought he was a good motivator. What do you think the problem was with Avery?
Well, I think one of the big things, and this is kind of, you know, it's a little upsetting that you have to think about it this way, but honestly, a big thing that changed with the Nets in that December month was Brook Lopez's injury. You know, when Brook went down with that foot injury, you could see the team just went into an immediate slide. And even when he came back, they weren't exactly comfortable yet with him on the floor, and he clearly wasn't 100% healthy. And, you know, losses, when they pile up, it's not, you know, you're not in Newark anymore. When you're in Brooklyn, things change. People are, you know, things are more on edge. Mikhail Prokhorov wants a winner immediately. And if they're not going to go, you know, as Avery said in his goodbye conference, maybe ownership thought that you're supposed to go 11-4 every single month. There's no cycle of the season. So I think a big part of it was honestly that, you know, circumstances outside of Avery's control. Now, with that said, you know, it's certainly true that there were certainly rifts between Avery Johnson and the players as the season went on. And as they kept losing, and losing was wearing on Darren Williams, it was wearing on Gerald Wallace, it was wearing on Joe Johnson. And for some reason, you know, I think Billy King said it best, he just didn't have that connection anymore. Now, also, one of the kind of criticisms of Avery was that in the end of games, or, you know, even in the beginning of third quarters, the team stopped kind of running any offense. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something on the coach. The coach is supposed to tell the guys, supposed to have an offensive system set in place. And at the end of the day, they were either going to just kind of one-on-one isolations or dribbling out the shot clock. And it was evident, and you could see it. You could see the offensive progression over the course of the game. They weren't doing what they should have been doing to be a successful basketball team. And you could argue the part of that's on the players, but the coach is the big motivator for running an offense successfully. And by the end of December, it was pretty plain to see that they weren't doing that under Avery Johnson.
Hey, Devin, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Good, good. And, you know, Devin, in my coverage of the team this year and in years past, one thing I noticed about Avery this year, and I think you hit it, you know, perfectly, that, you know, they kind of stopped running at the end of games, was that, you know, they would get out to a big lead, and then they would, you know, right in the beginning of games, and they would relinquish that lead. And then even when they had leads at the end of games, like in the Boston game earlier in the year, Paul Pierce hits that big three-pointer, and then they're still up 7, I think, at that point. And instead of just, you know, letting the game happen, Avery Johnson starts fouling Paul Pierce at the end of the game and giving him free throws and just hoping that his team on the other end of the court is going to make their free throws. He made a lot of interesting decisions at the end of games that I think actually got him into a little bit of hot water as well.
Yeah, I mean, that Pierce thing was a panic move. I remember just watching that night. After the game, Avery said something like, did you see him hit that three? Okay, yeah. That's why we did that. But, yeah. I mean, you got to trust your defense to some degree, you know, instead of trusting your free throw defense.
Exactly.
Avery did have a couple of those moments where he kind of eschewed maybe the smart basketball strategy because of these kind of weird, you know, his own kind of idiosyncrasies as a coach.
Right.
And, you know, I think that plays a big part in it, too. I mean, Avery was not the kind of coach who, I mean, when he had a system, there was very, I mean, he had a vision at the beginning, I mean, I'm sure you remember this, at the beginning of his tenure, he always spoke about his long-term vision and
yeah.
bringing the team to Brooklyn and being successful. And then he won Eastern Conference Coach of the Month, and that vision felt like it was being fulfilled. But there were still little things that you could see in his coaching style that were just a little, you know, they needed a little more improvement or they needed
Absolutely.
To be changed. And you know, that kind of stuff never came to fruition. And, you know, he clearly feels like he didn't get a good enough shot, you know, with this roster. But at the end of the day, you know, he has a certain set coaching method, and it wasn't working for this team.
Yeah, I don't want to harp on the coaching here, but I do want to say this. You know, you cover the team like I do and like Chris does. You know, PJ is just – you've seen his press conferences. First of all, he's not at a loss for words ever. And, and the other thing about PJ is that he's brutally honest. And that seems to be a very – it's very refreshing when there's a coach, an NBA coach, especially, you know, coaching this team, that, you know, he just puts it all out there. Even when he was approached about, you know, well, what do you think – you know, do you think because of the schedule that you've had and because of the breaks that Avery had gone through with injuries, do you think that Avery would have coached this team to the record that you've coached them to now? And he was brutally honest with his answer, and he basically said yes. So do you think it's a refreshing feeling not only to the media but to the players inside that locker room to have a coach that just kind of throws it all out there?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, Joe Johnson's even said that himself. Joe said something to the effect of, man, if I'm screwing up, you know, he'll tell me.
Yeah.
And Avery was kind of I don't want to say a schemer, but he never quite felt like Avery was telling the whole story.
Right.
The time I felt he was being most honest was right after he got fired, and it was almost a staggering difference in the way that he would speak to the media and speak about his players. And PJ, you know, I've never worried about that with PJ. I mean, well, and that's because PJ will literally say every single thing that needs to be said for any question that you ask him. He will break it down. What's interesting to me about him, though, is that he is such, I mean, he's a rambler. The guy will go on for minutes at a time.
Yes, he will.
About any topic. But he's also, there are times when he plays his cards very close to his chest. Like, he's a very, very smart coach. You can tell from the way that he speaks about his players, the way he speaks about strategy, the way he speaks about his team and his organization, that he knows what he can say and what he really shouldn't say.
Right.
And that's not to say that he's not being brutally honest, but say, you know, for instance, someone asked him if Deron Williams was the best point guard he ever coached, and PJ made a joke about some Italian kid.
Yeah, Bacigalupo.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, and it's, you know, there's just little answers that he gives that you know that, you know, he might have something to say, but he's just going to play the game a little bit and have a little fun with it. But as far as, you know, as far as communicating with the players and communicating, you know, really with the media on really important topics or really interesting things about the team, he's open. He's straightforward with you. He's not going to lie to you or BS you, and that's a big difference in the Brooklyn Nets era from Avery Johnson.
You know, Joe Johnson is now playing like the player that they thought that they were acquiring over the summer. You know, he's such an integral part of this team. He's such a big piece to why the Nets can be successful. What is he doing now that you're seeing that he wasn't doing at the beginning of the season?
Well, he's doing a little less isolation work, which is always good to see because one-on-one's fun sometimes, but at the end of the day, like you only want to rely on that if you can't rely on anything else in your shot clock. Now, I think he's hitting his shots with a little more fluidity, which is really nice. He's gotten some open shots. Him and Deron have really started to work off of each other a lot better than they did at the beginning of the season, where it was kind of they were trading places as opposed to working as a unit. And I think, you know, I think we're just kind of starting to see the kind of player Joe Johnson can be when he doesn't have to be the focal offensive option on the team. You know, when he was in Atlanta, I think almost half of his plays were either isolations or post-ups, and it was just kind of give Joe the ball, let him dribble for 8 seconds and see what kind of jump shot he can take.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not – there's still a little bit of that, but it's not like that all the time. He's worked really well as a spot-up shooter off of Deron and Brooke. And I think, you know, he's been very, very good lately, and it's good to see somebody who can kind of – who can get those isolation shots when you need them, but is also very effective as a spot-up shooter. Now, the one criticism, I think, of Joe Johnson you can really lay on right now, which is that he's just not getting in the free throw line. He's not attacking the basket with any sort of ferocity. He's not looking to get those, draw that contact. Even when he gets into the lane, he's throwing up floaters or fadeaways. And, you know, the Nets, if they want to be successful as an offense, you know, they're pretty good now, but they could be even better if Joe was drawing a little more of that contact, was getting to the free throw line, was getting those easy buckets, those easy points. And right now that's just not happening. But other than that, I don't think you can complain about how Joe Johnson's been playing.
You know, my colleague here talked about depth, and this has actually been a strength of this team. The bench has just been phenomenal, especially in times where they've needed to step up because of, you know, as we saw, the big stretch of games that they played, the double overtime game where they needed minutes from their guys on the bench, and they've just stepped up and played so well. How important, you know, down the stretch, is a guy like Marshawn Brooks going to be? How important is Andre Blatch going to be when, you know, they're making this postseason run here?
I think they're absolutely crucial. And what's great about the bench is that, you know, in years past at the Nets, they've had maybe like two or three real NBA quality players. And this year they've got maybe 9 or 10. And even if two bench guys are having an off night, there's two other bench guys who are going to hold them up. You know, if Dre is having an off night, CJ Watson's playing well. Or if Marshawn's having an off night, you know, Dre is playing well. And it's so refreshing to see a team that has such a solid second unit, has such a solid rotation, you know, especially in the beginning of second quarters, you can see it. They have Joe Johnson out there with four bench guys, and it's just they just play so well off of one another. It's really, really refreshing to see a team with that kind of talent. And that's going to be huge, especially down the stretch in the regular season, to kind of once the Nets are kind of figuring out where they're going to be in the playoffs, who they might be facing. You know, those last few games, I'm telling you, the bench is probably going to get a lot of minutes because Brook is going to need his rest, and Darren and Joe are going to want their rest. And the fact that they can go to a guy who's played as well as Dre this year, or played as well as C.J. Watson, or, you know, as good as Marshawn Brooks started to get back together, or Keith Bogans or Reggie Evans or whoever's going to be the backup at that point, having those guys have those minutes on the floor is going to be so crucial to giving this team the type of energy they need to make a really good playoff run.
Just a couple more quickies for me, Devin. And the first one, Charles Barkley, early in the season when the Knicks were going on their unbelievable run, said, "Mark my words, at the end of the season, the team in New York with the best record will be the Brooklyn Nets." What say you, Devin?
Man, you know, honestly, I think the Atlantic Division is still wide open between the Nets, the Knicks, and the Celtics. Anybody could take it. And it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a dogfight.
Don't dance around the question, Devin.
you want to give me a prediction, and I go back to the end of the year, and I'm just going to be ashamed of myself. I think the Nets have a very, very good chance of winning this division. I think especially the way they've come together in the last couple of weeks under PJ, I think they've looked like a different basketball team. And they've looked, and at the same time, the Knicks have kind of faltered after their really hot start this year. They're not playing at the same level that they did in the first, I think, 20-25 games.
And as we all knew, you know, injuries were going to start to creep up on this team. I mean, their average age is 50, so I mean,
Rasheed Wallace is their fourth oldest player. Rasheed Wallace retired 2 years ago and is their fourth oldest player. He's older than Jerry Stackhouse. Jerry Stackhouse is amazing because he can play so well at this age, and he's younger than Rasheed Wallace. It's just amazing.
what the Knicks need to do is clone Ray Allen. That's what I think they need to do.
Yeah.
But I, as you were talking to Joe, I was thinking of a trade for Humphreys, and this one might work out. I just want to know your thoughts. The Nets send the Knicks, I don't know if they do it, you know, within their own division, but they send Humphreys to the Knicks for Clyde Frazier, Wally Szczerbiak, who's only 35, by the way, and he's in the pre- and post-game studio, and Bill Bradley. Do you think the Nets and Knicks could pull the trigger?
I mean, look, I like Humphreys, but you got to throw DeBuscher in there if they want to make a fair.
Well, he's dead, so I don't think that's going to work unless you have a scoop for me, unless Manti Te'o made that story up too and Dave's still around.
Let's not
and say we did. One more for you, real easy for you. I just want to know, because I am a buffalo wing and pizza connoisseur, and since you live in Brooklyn, you grew up in Jersey like both Joe and I did, but you're in Brooklyn now. Give me the place that has the best wings. Buffalo wings, you know, none of the shishi fufu stuff that's out there. Some good buffalo wings and the best pizza you ever had, Devin.
That's okay. Well, all right. So my favorite place for wings in Brooklyn, and I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't gotten to a lot of places for wings in Brooklyn just yet. My favorite place for wings in Brooklyn is a place called Pork Slope in Park Slope.
It's, oh, nice.
It's not that far from the Barclays Center. It's like maybe like a 10-block walk down, I think it's Fifth Avenue. And they have a great deal on Sundays during football season where you can get a whole plate of wings and a pitcher of beer for $20. It's
wow.
a great place. And they've got really great, I mean, it's called Pork Slope. They've got a lot of great pork stuff, too. Now, for pizza, I'm going to go with two places here because there's one I grew up with in Verona, New Jersey, named Ray's Pizza. And
okay.
you know Ray's, the classic Ray's Pizza. But this place, there's something about it that the cheese is just, it's just more delicious. The pizza, pepperoni is perfect. Like, it's just, it's one of the best pies I've ever had. But if you want to go to Brooklyn, my place in Brooklyn for pizza is Tony's on DeKalb Avenue. It's like a little hole in the wall spot. It's one hallway. It's just one guy, Tony, who makes the pizza. And I swear to you, you have pizza at this place, you may not want to have pizza anywhere else ever again because every flavor, the heft of it, it's just classically Brooklyn pizza. So those are my suggestions for anybody who's curious. Go to Pork Slope, go to Tony's, and if you're in Jersey, go down to Verona and check out Ray's.
All right, so Ray's Pizza in Verona. I grew up right near there. Where did you grow up, Devin?
I grew up in Montclair, New Jersey.
Montclair. I grew up in Bloomfield, okay? Mm-hmm. So we were neighbors, we're rivals. I actually, now, I love Ray's Pizza. It's very good. But I am a Star Tavern guy.
Don't say Star Tavern. Oh, my God.
I am a Star Tavern guy. Give me a little thin crust. Give me a little beer from Star Tavern.
Look, I love Star Tavern. It's a good place. But let me tell you something real quick. If you have two Star Tavern pies, that's going to cost you twice as much as one Ray's Pizza, and it's going to be half the food. Star Tavern's pepperoni, they know what they're doing.
They do know what they're doing. But listen, let's meet up at Pal's Cabin. Let's talk more basketball. I knew where you grew up. You don't have to tell me.
You know, I grew up not a 5-10 minute drive from Pal's Cabin. I'll meet you there anytime.
All right, that is Devin Karpershian, the managing editor of thebrooklyngame.com. Devin, are you on Twitter?
I
have
am.
To be. What is your handle?
My handle is UURDS. You can think of it as words, but with two U's instead of the W.
So UURDS is your little Twitter handle there. Thank you so much for coming on. Great information. And, you know, we put the cherry on top with the best pizza and wings in the area. So we really appreciate you coming on, Devin. Hopefully we'll have you on further down the line when the Nets are making their playoff push. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Great to be here, man. Take care.
All right.
The Off the Wall podcast comes to you each week on iTunes and YesNetwork.com. If you like what you're listening to, simply subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you have an extra minute, leave a comment and rating.